call this meeting of the House Health and Human Services Committee to order, and I'm going to open a public hearing on House Bill 2124.
Sandy.
Good morning, Mr. Chair. Good morning, members of the committee. House Bill 2124 directs the state. This is part of the package that we had originally scheduled on February 3rd. Due to time, we were not able to get to these first two bills. But this is a part of the package, bills presented by, pre-session filed by former Representative Janet Carlson. This directs the state agencies that provide services to children and their families to develop a statewide plan based on the local coordinated comprehensive plan. It also directs the state agencies to jointly submit a budget and legislative recommendation based on those plans, and it directs the state agencies to enter into agreements for coordination of the children and their families. I do have testimony that would have been passed out had we gotten 2124 from the commission on the 3rd. I will provide to you.
And just for the information of the committee and those in the audience, I seriously doubt if we get to everything today, but and there are some of the bills scheduled for work session that have amendments that we don't have in anything other than hand engrossed, and I don't intend on moving things without real amendments with them. So we will get as far as we can today and no further. So first up, Ed Johnston. Good morning.
My name is Ed Johnston from Toledo, Oregon. And on House Bill 2124, I got to say that this is an alarming bill to the state, because this gives the state more intrusive rights to come into your family and to create, basically what it comes down to is trying to create more jobs out of government agencies. We don't need any more. Measure 28 is one of those that spoke against this. We need to stop this. We don't need to have databases of personal information of families going in anymore. The identification of this bill suggests that basically that Hitler is alive, and I use that extremely, because with data information going on, it says that the families have no right to be protected, that you are intruding into the families and saying to the families that there's one government that runs you, and this bill definitely needs to be out, because dealing with data information, there's enough of that going on. We have enough collected data going on. The schools have been doing it long enough, and this affects your grandchildren and your children. So if you are anticipating that you have no privacy, this is another one of those intrusive things that states that us as citizens literally have no privacy. We do not need any more of these intrusive bills in the families or our state, because this is not a former Nazi Germany, and by this bill we'll make it even more intrusive, as we already have had. So definitely this bill definitely should be kicked out. But the cities and counties would definitely make sure that people could be homes could be evaded a lot easier by this bill. We already have enough where people have been falsely identified, falsely accused. I know from personal experience from school surveys where we have been falsely accused of child abuse and then murdering our stepdaughter when she was visiting her aunt because of school surveys. So that's a blatant waste of tax dollars, and we don't need any more waste of tax dollars. We need to tighten our belt and make sure the state works for everybody's best interest. Thank you.
Okay. Velma Hartwig.
My name is Thelma Hartmid. Good morning. I'm from Harlan, Oregon, up in the hills in Lincoln County. I agree with what Mr. Johnson has said, because I have been working with families for many years who have been victims of the system, and many of them have been accused of things that they didn't do, of course, but also it's getting more and more and more intrusive. Last session, the legislature passed a bill to invade the homes of every newborn child, to see what's going on, to determine whether or not these people are good parents. And if you don't think so, you should look at the questionnaires that the social workers have been given to ask the families. Now, these people have not been reported for anything bad. All they did bad was have a baby. They have been asked things like, do you know anybody that has done drugs? Have you ever done drugs? And they're to observe the people when they answer. They're to ask, how was your relationship with your mother? And observe and ask questions about what their relationship was with their parents. Now remember, these are people that were not reported for abuse. And what's going to happen when we give more and more authority to invade homes because some kid acts out in school, instead of letting the parents take care of this? Because when I was a kid, if we acted up, we would answer to my dad, and it wasn't fun. We would go out behind the woodshed, and we would behave after that. So I think this is invading families, and we need to give more authority to families, not to agencies, because the families have been weakened more and more. People are afraid to spank their children because they'll be reported for abusing their kids. But if the kid acts up, then the family's in trouble because they should have done something to correct the child. And I think we need to start going the other way, to give the parents more authority instead of giving the state more authority. The state, in fact, is not the parent, even though they think they are. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Donna.
Good morning.
Good morning.
For the record, my name is Donna Middleton. I'm the director of the State Commission on Children and Families. I'm here to support House Bill 2124. The state agencies have been working very hard to begin to coordinate a system of services and supports for young children and families, as well as juvenile justice system services. We have in front of you a copy of an interagency agreement. That agreement was signed by all the state agencies in support of working in a coordinated fashion for children and families, something that the legislature has asked repeatedly for state agencies to begin to do, which is to coordinate services, make sure that families are getting supported, and that children are not dropping through the cracks. This piece of legislation would accomplish those things. However, I also need to say to you that because of the state budget issues, that interagency agreement is a lofty goal at best. We have systems which are reducing staff and reducing support for our most vulnerable citizens. So while I support the endeavor that we are going forward with in this particular piece of legislation, I do need to say that because the resources are diminishing, that all of those things that are mentioned in the interagency agreement may not be accomplished. And so I just want to let you know that the concept is genuine, and the concept is real, and it should be supported because it is the way for the state to do its social service business in a coordinated, collaborative, communicative way. Can we get it done given our budget issues? I don't think so. So I just want to let you know that while we all support, and every state agency that signed on that agreement would tell you the same thing, we support going forward with a coordinated effort for our children and families. But at this particular time, we will not be able to accomplish all that is listed in that interagency agreement. Thank you.
Question, Mr. Chair.
Yes.
Donna, referring to the budgetary issues, tell me about the money that would be required to put this into operation.
Chair Cruz, Representative Tomei, The money that would be required is the current dollars that we have in all of our state budgets at this particular time. What I am aware of is that we continue to have budget shortfalls. When we wrote and supported this interagency agreement, we started on it almost a year ago, the budget picture was not as it is today. Getting there, but not as it is today. And so while we're all, as state agencies and local folks, supporting the concept of working together, we need services that help with technical assistance, training, communication, making sure that people are monitoring and evaluating the same, reducing paperwork. All of that does take some state support, for which we are not going to be able to avail ourselves of, and the local communities as well.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Well, that's somewhat speculative. I will say it depends upon how the legislature and the Ways and Means process direct resources. So, for example, if there was a directive that FTE go towards this, it will happen. So, I mean, that's a matter of choices at that point. So to say that this won't happen, I don't think is clearly accurate. It's going to fall into the prioritization of services and responsibilities through the Ways and Means process.
So this would be referred to Ways and Means?
Absolutely.
Thank you.
Yeah,
Representative Barker. With all your experience along this line, I just wonder what your opinion would be. We're hearing testimony that the state shouldn't interfere. Do you think it's a good way to raise the kids to have somebody bigger and stronger, take them out behind the woodshed and teach them that being bigger and stronger and using aggression is a good way to solve things?
Chair Cruz, Representative Barker, no, I don't believe that is correct.
Thank you.
Representative Barker, you raise a whole set of issues that we're not going to go into at this point in time. Specifically, this bill, and correct me if I'm wrong, is designed to make the state more responsive to the local priorities. And that is the entire purpose of this bill, and we've been trying for a period of time to try to get this system to be locally driven, and this is a step in that process. Is that correct?
Representative Cruz, that's absolutely correct.
So we're not changing the world. We're just changing who calls the shots. So are there any other questions? Thank you. Do you need to speak to this just a little bit? Okay. Commissioner Carlson.
Thank you, Chair Cruz and members of the committee. I can't think of a more wonderful thing to do than spend President's Day with the House Committee on Human Services.
Marion County shut down for the day?
We are. Actually, this is my day off, but I'm happy to spend it with you. Just a couple of comments. First of all, this bill originated as an executive order by Governor John Kitzhaber in conjunction with the various state agencies and is currently in effect, as I understand, unless it's been rescinded by Governor Kulongoski, which I doubt it has. And I certainly am sympathetic to the budget issues because it will require a great deal of continuing effort at the state level among the different partners to make sure that it happens. Secondly, I just wanted the committee to be aware that when the Commission on Children and Families and the broader Senate Bill 555 planning process was audited by the Legislative Fiscal Office, this bill was one of their recommendations. They recommended that the executive order be put into statute so that it could continue. The final thing I wanted to leave you with, it was a bit remarkable because the language of the executive order actually went out to the local level for comment. So counties were able to comment on the language and make sure that it met local needs as well as state needs. And a number of comments were sent in, and the language was adjusted based on those comments. So it was a very inclusive process in developing the language for the executive order that is now in effect. So I just wanted to make sure that those facts were before the committee as you make your decisions. Thank you.
Okay, thank you, Janet. And like I said, we will bring this back. I think it's a good piece of work, but it will have to go to Ways and Means, and hopefully helps that subcommittee and their prioritization of what should and should not be done with the lot of money they're going to have to spend. So. With that, I'm going to close public hearing on 2124. and open a public hearing on 2125. Sandy.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, House Bill 2125 is modifying the State Commission on Children and Families memberships. It's focused on two particular representation. The public membership is being reduced from 6 to 1, while and then increasing the local commission representation from 2 to 4. It specifies that of those 4, 2 be from urban areas and 2 be from rural areas. One representative, and then in the reduction of the public membership from 6 to 1, that difference, one representative is to be from the local public safety coordinating council, the mental health, and the criminal justice system, and the local public health agency. It also identifies that the Association of Oregon Counties submit a list of names to the governor for membership consideration. I also have Marcia Clark was unable to stay. She would like her testimony acknowledged.
Ed and Velma, do you want to come up together?
You want to go ahead and start?
Well, we were looking at this back here, and evidently it gives more local control. And if you're going to go through with this foolishness, I think that is a very good idea, to have more local control rather than having it come from the top down. Because at least the citizens of each area will have a little bit more say in what happens.
Well, I'd like to add to that, too. My name is Ed Johnston. Dealing with local control, and some of these things, what concerns me is the appointment done by Services Children and Family. Because I know from personal experience, I've applied numerous times over many years to be on the commission. I'm in as one of the court-appointed advisors for Services Children and Family, but I have a different view of sometimes because I've lived through some experience of being falsely accused. I have watched Services Children and Family falsely accuse numerous people. I've dealt with over 300 cases in my county alone of false identification and false statement on people, and where the agencies have called businesses to slander people who are working. And I would like to see that if this bill goes through, that also, too, maybe that this could be one of those where the local citizens of the county could vote on it. You give the residents the point to vote on it so that the people who are going to be in these seats at least have to be represented by the community, and at least they'll have a true voice to be appointed, that sometimes paperwork or certain structures of families who have been set through the system could be hidden through paperwork. We don't want that. We've already had enough of that over the years. It's already been appointed evidence that that is a reality, even going today as we speak. So at least with that, maybe for a vote for local, but at least we want to make sure that there's an open opinion on this and to keep it open for everybody in the communities. Thank you.
Thank you. Clark Balcom.
Morning. I am Clark Balcom. I'm representing the Citizens Commission on Human Rights of Oregon, and we are an international watchdog organization that investigates and exposes psychiatric violations of human rights, and are here today to testify in opposition to HB 2125. Over the past 5 decades, a trillion-dollar industry has grown up, which one might call the mental illness industry. It is an industry that operates by defining the problems of life as disorders and diseases. It is an industry that operates by the business model has simply been to convince potential customers and funding sources, such as yourselves, that their and their children's problems are diseases, that they're sick. Through marketing, advertising, and conferences, the industry has created a market of children and families who no longer look to solve their life problems, because these problems have been redefined as sickness. Any legislation which addresses life problems, particularly problems of children, must be viewed in the context of this industry, recognizing that it is a business, indeed the dominant business in the field of human services. This industry has been particularly aggressive in marketing psychiatric services and drugs to children, either through their parents directly or through state agencies and schools. The legislation we're presented with today, HB 2125, deals with services to help children and their families. The root causes of the problems that children and families have today are not hard to identify. Failure in school, low-income families, stressed-out parents looking for work, the highest hunger rate in the country, single-parent families, drug use, etc. The mental illness industry would have you believe that these problems are unrelated to the obvious root causes, but are instead the result of diseases which need to be diagnosed and treated with drugs. In other words, these problems are nobody's responsibility and can't be solved. The kids just have faulty brains. By repeating its marketing message of childhood disorders, the mental illness industry gets you to disconnect the problems kids are having from their obvious causes and substitute a very costly lifelong reliance on the mental health director, in this case, which would change the makeup of the committee, and on psychiatric drugs. None of the problems children and families are having, as I've described, have anything to do with illness or disease or faulty brains. And bringing in a mental health director onto the State Commission on Children and Families will not give parents better paying jobs, solve hunger in low-income families, or give our high school children the tutors or study skills they need to graduate successfully. Bringing the mental illness industry into the State Commission on Children and Families will only continue the faulty system we've been using that got us into the dire condition we have today, blaming real solvable life problems on faulty brains. We must look at any legislation to help children and families from the point of view of one question: does it address the root cause of their difficulties, or does it simply funnel parents and children into the mental health system? If you examine the root causes of the problems children are having, lack of adult attention and communication, lack of success in school, physical health, you'll immediately see that all of these problems can be addressed without a single psychiatric label being placed on a child or a single psychiatric drug being prescribed. Services are available or can be developed which truly help children and their parents and attack the root causes of their problems without resorting to a system that labels and drugs them for profit. We urge you to allow the State Commission on Children and Families to focus on programs that will solve real-life problems and not be sidetracked by the addition of the mental illness industry to its ranks.
Any questions?
Yes,
Representative Comey.
Thank you. Mr. Balcom, I see that you're from the Citizens Commission on Human Rights of Oregon.
Yeah.
Tell me about this commission.
Well, sure. There's an attachment to the second bill write-up that I'll hand out later.
Okay.
To 2128, it gives more information. It was started in 1969. Excuse me. It was established by the Church of Scientology, which has become somewhat controversial for its views on psychiatry, but I think they shouldn't be dismissed out of hand, that they're important. It's an important view that should be taken into consideration. I'm an attorney, and I'm here representing Citizens Commission on Human Rights.
Tell me who's on the commission.
Currently, according to the Oregon registration, it's two people that I know personally and professionally. Dr. James Angst, who is the one I know better. I'm trying to remember the other guy's name. Rick Green is the other person who's on the board in Oregon. It's a, as I stated, it's an international organization. And the Oregon Commission is also guided by U.S. Commission.
So follow up?
Yes.
So basically,
did I answer your question?
Well, basically, this is a U.S. commission, not an Oregon commission. Is that
no, this is. I'm here on behalf of the Oregon commission.
It's composed of two people?
It's,
what I'm hearing?
No, there's a third, but I'm sorry. I don't remember at the moment. I might have it in my file. Let's see. All right. I guess it is as registered in Oregon. It's two people.
Okay. Thank you.
The two that I mentioned. Yeah.
Thank you, Mr.
It's a nonprofit, and I'm a member as well as a representative.
Thank you.
Okay. You're welcome. Thank you.
Representative Barker.
Thank you, Ms. Crawford. In talking about this, I mean, I'm hearing between the lines you're talking about the Ritalin use and so on with the kids in the schools. Do you have any idea how many, what kind of a percentage, and I don't care any school district, Portland or any place else, what kind of percentage of the kids are on the psychotropic drugs?
I don't have the numbers in front of me, Representative Barker, but I have heard some figures. I think they were national figures, but I have heard figures around 20%, which would be like 1 in 5, and I'm not sure that's limited to Ritalin or would be psychotropic drugs in general. And I can't speak to the for sure as to the accuracy of that.
Thank you very much.
You're welcome.
Any other questions? Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Janet. I'd also like to point out to the committee now the overprescribing of drugs to school children is an issue, but not germane specifically to this legislation. Go ahead.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. Janet Carlson, Marion County Commissioner. House Bill 2125 is designed to try to bring more local representation on the State Commission on Children and Families. Since I've been involved directly in the legislative process, which would have begun in the 1997 session, I believe we've had at least two or three other bills that have attempted the same thing. We had a bill in 97 that asked for people with experience with local commissions to be included as public members, and for some reason that one didn't fly. And then we had one, I believe, in the last session that would have changed it to the 5 congressional districts that passed this committee unanimously, passed the House floor, I believe, unanimously, maybe with a couple absences, and languished in the Senate for reasons that are probably partially political, and we won't go any farther than that. We're at it again with a little bit of a different slant on it this time. And the factors to consider in this are, first of all, do we want to enlarge the State Commission on Children and Families any larger than the 12 members? Right now there are 12 members appointed by the governor. 6 of them are open appointments and others are specified, and you can see those in the legislation. And then the Department of Human Services Director and the Superintendent of Public Instruction have slots on the commission. So it makes the commission a size of 14. Organizational studies of good working boards and commissions, I think, say that a range of 8 to 12 is probably ideal. Once you get up too much more than 14, it doesn't become a working group anymore, and it becomes difficult. So the committee may want to opt to do some other things. I'm just explaining why we kept the bill within the bounds of the 12 members that were already there, rather than just adding members to the commission. Also, as you add members, it adds expense because you need to pay travel and so forth in the meetings. Secondly, then, what the reason behind changing the public membership is to try to get, again, more people from the local level and from the different disciplines that we've been talking about in the other bills onto the State Commission on Children and Families, where they will be engaged in helping to set the policies that govern comprehensive planning and the other activities that you've heard about over the past several weeks.
Yeah, Representative Mona Sanderson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. The 6 public members now, where are they? Where are they from? Do you know that?
Mr. Chair, Representative Mona Sanderson, I had asked Sandy Tealy-Circa if she could get a copy of the membership list. Were you able to do that, of the State Commission on Children and Families? And if not, Donna Middleton and Mickey Lansing are here, and I know they can answer the question.
I do have it. It's in another bill.
My sense is, because I served on the State Commission last session, most of them are from the Portland and Salem or Willamette Valley area. Bobby Green is from Lane County. Mike Brott is from Yamhill County. There are a number from the Portland area. Bob Lieberman is from Josephine County. He's a mental health provider, residential care provider for youth. And we have a juvenile director who is from
Wasco County.
Wasco County. So the
we'll get copies.
Right.
A follow-up thing?
Yes.
Yes. I was just wondering if we would lose a perspective from the public representatives by having more of the commission. I just want to know, get a feel for if we would be losing some excellent input by getting rid of the public representatives.
And Representative Cruz, Representative Monis Anderson, the trade-off in all of this, again, if you keep the numbers static, is whether or not you have people who understand the issues that involve at the local level. And sometimes when you have people who are selected from the general public who have not been to a local commission meeting themselves, really are much like the new members of this committee, maybe, you know, sort of in the dark in terms of how the system works at the local level in terms of decision making, they're not as conversant in what concerns the local folks are bringing forward. And I guess I might add also that local commission members, at least half, 51%, have to be lay citizens. So they are not professionals in the system. And the two that are on the state commission now are lay members. They are not professionals. They're not service deliverers. So the four local commission members could, if the governor so chose, continue to be lay members. They would simply have had experience, be involved at the local level in their local commission on children and families. Now, it is true that the local mental health director, the public health director, and the public safety coordinating council member would probably be professionals in the system from criminal justice, public health, and mental health, so they would not bring as much of that lay perspective, although when I'm in meetings, they tell me that they're also parents and community members as well.
Good point. Without seeing the list, I know that there is mental health is already represented with Mr. Lieberman.
Well, Mr. Chair, Mr. Lieberman is a mental health provider. He
right.
may not be a no. county mental health provider, which is a bit of a different perspective, I would believe.
Are you done?
Well, I was I was answering your questions, Mr. Chair. I think I'll just close with that.
Okay, any other questions? Okay, thank you very much.
Oh, Mr. Chair,
yes.
Gina Furman was interested in perhaps coming forward. She wasn't on your list.
Who?
Gina Furman from the Mental Health.
Never heard of
directors.
Her. Come on up, Gina. For the record, that was a joke. Good morning.
Good morning. Thank you, Representative Crowe's committee members. For the record, my name is Gina Furman. I am the director of the Association of Community Mental Health Programs. I work with all 36 counties, 32 community mental health programs. My organization has taken a neutral position on this. But I do want to refute what a former person set up here. Contrary, I do believe that mental health is a brain disease. And I also believe that people need the opportunity to get help. That's one of the things that our schools, parents are crying out for. Is the opportunity for the state, communities, to have them get help. And you can't always get help in your own home. And I just wanted to put that on the record. Also, for the record, both Commissioner Carlson and I have PhDs in education and social public policy, and we have studied this intensely. And I think we need to provide, we are people too, and sometimes people think the government is against them. And in this case, it could not be further from the truth. I think we, the people, are the government, and we need to work together to provide opportunities for whatever family ask for and need.
Thank you very much. Before I close this, I think I want to say one of the things that I think makes this helpful from my perspective is actually starting tomorrow night. We have the work group dealing with the mental health delivery system begins its task, and I think our ability to coordinate those services in this population around what I think is going to be part of the end product of that group as we restructure and reprioritize is making sure that mental health services at the local level are appropriate and funded appropriately. Clearly, from that perspective, the ability to coordinate at the local level is going to be a key component to this. So I think making sure that sort of representation, both from the mental health community and from the criminal justice community, are vitally important, because, as we all know, the criminal justice community ends up providing a lot of mental health services, probably in most cases inappropriately, but that's the way it is. So I think this is Representative Mona Sanderson.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chair. And just for the record, because I think someone said that the public members might have been primarily from the metro area, I noticed that two are from Eugene, one is from Bend, and one is from Salem. And then there are two with Hispanic names that are vacant, that were there but aren't members now. So there are really two that are then vacant.
Okay, well, yeah, just another piece of perspective from the perspective of southern and eastern Oregon. The Willamette Valley is the metro area, so.
Mr. Chair.
That was another joke, by the way.
Thanks for telling me.
That most of people believe.
Mm-hmm. Could we bring up Donna Middleton again just about this bill?
If she would like to, I guess in this case she has no choice.
I don't know if this is... Oh, I know you need to introduce yourself.
Donna Middleton, Director of the State Commission on Children and Families.
Thank you, Donna. Could you give us your perspective on changing the membership of the commission? And I'm wondering if the commission... I mean, I know you're the director of the commission, mm-hmm. but if the commission itself had any response to the change in membership.
Representative Cruz, Representative Tomei, the State Commission has not taken a position on this particular legislation. However, as was pointed out by Representative Mona Sanderson, we do have a number of folks with a number of, we think, very good perspectives. Dr. Alan Merritt comes from Bend. He's a physician, pediatrics specialty. I believe he brings an excellent perspective to the State Commission. We have Bobby Green, who is a county commissioner from Lane County, also chairs the Health and Human Services for the Association of Oregon Counties, also brings a very good local perspective. And then we have Molly Rogers from the Dalles, who is the representative from the Juvenile Directors Association, has been supervising their local commission as well as being a partner when she was in Wallowa County as a partner when she was the juvenile director there. So we do believe we have a good perspective of folks who represent the public as well as represent particular disciplines. Bob Lieberman, while he is a provider of mental health services from the Josephine County area, also brings a very, very broad perspective on mental health and other human services issues. We also have a couple of vacancies, and we hope to fill those with folks that represent our total state, meaning folks from Eastern Oregon and other areas of the state. We try very, very hard to have a regional perspective in all of the representation and to have a very broad perspective. We believe that the citizenry of this state is indeed able to advise us on how we do our social service business.
Okay, thank you. Questions?
Yes, Representative Mona Sanderson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Having been a part of the local commission as a representative from public health, there always was disagreements, it seemed, between the local commissions and the state commission. And I was just wondering if, with more representatives from the local commission, that might help the relationship between the state commission and the local commission. I think maybe that's the crux of the bill, but I'd like your feedback.
Chair Cruz, Representative Mona Sanderson, I think that was the intent, is to bring those two areas closer. We do have two representatives from local commissions on the state commission currently. We have a rural representative and an urban representative. Samuel Henry is from the Portland area. He is on the local Multnomah County Commission on Children and Families. And then we have a representative from Yamhill County who is also the chair of their local commission. So we do have that local perspective. Would it help to have more? I don't know. I can't say that to you. But what we do have is we have open meetings in which local coalition and Commission on Children and Families have an opportunity to speak, to be part of the process, and we try in every way possible to include all local commissions in all of our work.
Thank you very much.
Chair.
Yes, Representative Anderson.
I'm still a little confused by the number. We have 14 to be appointed. We have a list here with 16.
That's including ex officio that aren't part of the commission, but they sit at the table and don't vote, just offer their expertise.
Superintendent of Public Instruction, who else?
No.
15. Oh, yeah. Okay. Department of Human Services. Okay, that's 14. On the legislative representative, yes, the president of the Oregon Senate, Senator Hartung.
The legislative representatives are appointed by the president and the speaker. It isn't necessarily them. And when Senator Hartung was appointed, he was appointed by Senate President Gene Durfer at the time. That was before he became interim president and then retired, I believe. So, but at this point, he's still serving until President Courtney appoints somebody else to take that position.
My question then is on the legislative representative. It's currently vacant for a senator.
Well, for a senator,
I assume that's a mistake.
Yeah, that was Representative Carlson, who is no longer a representative. She has elevated her position in life by going to the county level. So it's like a job that actually pays a living wage and stuff like that. So so that also would be a position to be filled by Speaker Menas.
Right.
Thank you. I'm going to close the public hearing on 2125 and open a public hearing on 2128. Sandy.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, House Bill 2128 had its public hearing on February 3rd. This one was requiring that certain funding be distributed to counties or regions for the children and families be used only according to the budget of the local commissions on children and family or with recommendation of the local commissions. During the public hearing portion of it, we heard comments on an amendment to delete sections 1 through 7. You have the dash 2 amendments before you, which do indeed do that. However, we have testimony from Gene Cohen suggesting some additional language be included in the remaining, what in the bill, 2128 is section 8, but if the dash 2s are adopted, would be section 2. I'm passing out that testimony right now, and then Janet said that she'd certainly speak to those conceptual. The language that Gene has referred to is in the fourth paragraph down on the first page.
Okay, first up we have Ed and Velma.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Dalto.
Do we have Commissioner Mike Jordan here this morning?
Yeah.
No.
Okay. Thank you.
Go ahead.
Okay. My name is Ed Johnson again. Anyhow, I definitely want to state that I could definitely speak for at least hundreds and thousands of people in my community, because I've brought thousands of signature sheets up on similar bills like this, compared to a previous hearing where one of the psychiatrists brought how she speaks up for the community. She does not speak for the community, at least for Lincoln County. I know I have a substantial following. My name is Ed Johnson. I'm the one who successfully did Lincoln County recall on the school board because they could not identify their funding, and we definitely want audits to the truth. What concerns me about this bill will hold the counties hostage. So if the state does not, if the county does not do directly, or the local people do not do directly what the Commission of Services Children and Family want, they will directly hold them hostage and withdraw money from them. This is not a bill benefiting the counties or the communities at all. This is a total hostage bill. We don't need more intrusive government in our family houses. We do not need to have anybody collecting more data on our families. Because it's a horrifying experience when your family has no rights. And the state of Oregon is starting to definitely state, especially with this bill, here's another one, that states compared to Senate Bill 449 that passed in 1999, that we have no rights in the state. And I'm ashamed that people, senators and state reps, and I'm ashamed for these people for the state of Oregon that they're passing these type of bills, taking away the rights for the almighty dollar. Psychiatry was never noted until the late 60s and early 70s in court. Before that, it was a non-medicine. Psychiatry is one of those things that's scared because of the article also, too, in the Statesman Journal, how it's so easy, which I would like to grab that article real quick. This is the one thing that gets to me. And this is from Elizabeth Loftus. False memories are easily planted. This is a major thing. How I know is that I know from past experience. I've dealt with services, children, family growing up, myself personally. I grew up when I was 12 years old. I had one of my mother's boyfriends go after her with a butcher knife, went to kill her. I defended my mother.
I've given you lots of leeway and let you testify on lots of bills. I'm going to ask that you keep your testimony germane.
Well, I'm speaking in this because this is how dramatic effect, how these things can be blown away, or blown out of proportion, I mean, by services, children, and family. And I think by the example needs to be explained why. Because when I defended my mother's life, I was sent to a psychiatrist. And it was trying to be implemented how I was doing the wrong thing by defending my mother's life. That disturbed me. In 6 months of going to a psychiatrist admitted to the state that I had no mental problem. Anybody in their right mind would have defended their family. To justify this is a horrifying thing for all kids. And I'm really disturbed that we are going in this fashion with school surveys and the surveys and saying that these are helping our children when they're not. If we're going to protect our children, let's protect our children. Let's not create more funding, wasteful spending. When I was 14 years old, my mother had another boyfriend that tried. I grew up in a dysfunctional family, as SCF likes to say. I defended my mother's life twice. Now, in today's standard, I'd be in prison for defending my mother's life, and that's not right. Your children and grandchildren will be doing the same thing if they had to defend their family. Now, if we are dealing with terrorist attacks and suggestion of terrorist attacks, we're supposed to be defending our country and our families. By this, we won't be allowed to. So we have to be very cautious about what we really are doing to not only ourselves, but our grandchildren and our children presently. So I consider to take this bill in consideration of not passing recommendations dealing with the county commissioners on this, because the county commissioners, this would delegate what goes on in the community by the state. We will actually lose local control. We will be delegated and dictated how we live. That will be the truth of House Bill 2128. the counties will be dictated on how they live. I can see it the way this thing is written, and it will be the reverse of what they're trying to implement, and we ought to be afraid for that. And I suggest that people, the Today Statement Journal has this, dealing with false memories are easily implanted. All these people from SCF know how easy it is for subliminal messages to be planted in a young child's mind. And it's horrifying that we allow this to happen. We are the ones that can stop this. So let's please stop it for our children. I mean, in Lincoln County, dealing with the Advocacy Center, a 5-year-old child was raped by a doctor, and I'll explain why. The father was accused of fondling a child that was molested that never was. The child went to the Advocacy Center, was strapped down, literally tied down in forced examination.
I appreciate the gentleman's testimony. I don't think that I'm going to sit here and listen to sort of unsubstantiated reports. So if the gentleman could wrap up his testimony,
I will do that. But the child was strapped down and invaded by the doctor.
I believe I just brought this up. I don't want to hear this discussion.
Well, I think it should be publicly known because this is what's happening in the state of Oregon. These children are not being always by the family members and stuff. They are being done by the state.
I ask you to be germane. This bill is about the relationship between the state and
the county.
That's right. And funding priorities.
And
you are off base.
No, I don't feel I am.
Sir, you are off base.
In your opinion, sir, I am. But I can see how
I am the chair of the committee, so my opinion counts, sir.
Yes, it does. I will not disrespect it. I appreciate your time, sir.
Thank you.
Well, mainly what I wanted to say was what he said, basically, that we don't need a top-down dictatorship. Because if you really want to have things handled at a local level with local decisions, you can't have somebody at the top saying, if you do this, we'll give you this money, you know. So that was my main thrust here. And by the way, the statement I made about behind the woodshed was a euphemism. My dad never touched me that way. He gave me the look over his glasses. thank you very much.
Thank you. And I know behind the woodshed for me was where I went to split the wood, but that's the whole other thing. Clark.
Mr. Balkin, would you state for the record who you are and who you're with?
Yes, I'm Clark Balkin. I'm with the Citizens Commission on Human Rights of Oregon. As a preamble, I thought I would be the source of the strongest wording against certain aspects of this bill. I may have been mistaken in that assumption. I'll be reading again, but this time you also have a colorful booklet attached. Representative Tomei, House Bills 2120 to 2128 create a statewide net to scoop up anyone to see what might be wrong with them, letting the normal ones, in quotes, normal, sift out through the net again back to their lives. If you pass these bills, you add into the statewide net a mental health system that relies almost entirely upon psychiatrists, which means you're always going to find something wrong with people in the net. Looking in the DSM-4, you'll be able to find any one of us falling into some disorder categories, such as speech articulation disorder, spelling disorder, written expression disorder, mathematics disorder, nicotine use or withdrawal, caffeine intoxication or withdrawal, or sibling rivalry disorder. Then there is the all-encompassing related disorder requiring clinical attention called phase of life problem. What was the newest one they floated last year? Relational disorder, to cover just about any problem you might be having with someone around you. The all-popular cash cow, ADHD, is crumbling out from underneath the industry, requiring an advance, in quotes, advance of a new label. Not a single one of these disorders has a diagnostic test to detect it in people. They're judgmental, arbitrary, completely open to interpretation. Once labeled, you cease to be a legitimate source of information about your own health needs and cannot even demand a second opinion, blood test, or non-drug treatment without getting another diagnosis of oppositional defiant disorder or non-compliance with treatment disorder. Once a person is diagnosed, state funds can be accessed regardless of what treatment is delivered, how long that treatment takes, or if the treatment actually produces a cure. Imagine that all the psychiatrist or mental health worker has to do is get the diagnosis and they can collect a fee for the rest of the person's life because everybody knows, in quotes, once it is included in the DSM, it can't be cured. All that's needed is the opportunity to get the patient in front of them to make the diagnosis. There's a case that highlights the danger of this, and this is on page 15 of the attached booklet. John, a happy and successful family man, began suffering from inexplicable sadness and exhaustion. Unable to concentrate at work, he cut down his overtime, slept in late on weekends, and lost control of his emotions, inexplicably subjected to fits of uncontrollable weeping. He saw three doctors, two of them psychiatrists, who settled him with a variety of DSM labels and treated him with 26 different drugs. A fourth doctor conducted a thorough medical diagnostic and physical evaluation and found that John was suffering from a slow-growing tumor of the brain lining. John's tumor was removed and sadness and fatigue rapidly cleared. The source is giving from the booklet is actually quoting Sidney Walker, the third MD, in his book, A Dose of Sanity. House Bill 2125 secures the psychiatrist's position to issue DSM labels on anyone in the net, and then HB 2128 guarantees his funding. You open this door of access to Oregon's children and families, and you'll bankrupt the state, just as previous legislators have bankrupted the Oregon Health Plan by allowing blanket coverage of these very same psychiatric diagnoses and lifelong drug prescriptions. No one ever gets cured, so they're patients for life. Psychiatry is the most fraudulent area of medicine, and if there's no room for normal, it's not working into the Commission on Children and Families system. We'll bring increased numbers of mentally ill, increased numbers of children on drugs, and a bankrupt budget. We urge a no vote on House Bill 2128.
Thank you, Mr. Balcom. Any questions on Mr. Balcom?
Just a comment, maybe, but maybe it can elicit a response from you.
Sure.
As a nurse, I've referred many people with behavioral disorders, not knowing how else to classify them, and many of them have been diagnosed and were brought back into the system because of medication. Now, I'm not a proponent of medication for every mental health illness. I believe environment is a big factor in many cases. But there's so much good that I've seen with children being able to become, I hate to use the word normal, but adapt to their environment so much better because of the drugs. And I'm wondering if you have the philosophy that no drugs, no matter what.
Representative Cruz, Representative Mona Sanderson, that's a fair question. And certainly you have much more medical training than I do. So I can't speak to that end of it. But philosophically, and I believe I'm on the same track as the organization that I represent here, is that we're not saying that no drugs are ever allowable or helpful or maybe appropriate in a particular case, but we're quite chary of the what seems to us a runaway system of simply labeling and medicating in the absence of real help, which at the very least it seems would, and there are recommendations in the back of the booklet, the very last pages. One of those would be that anyone being referred for psychiatric evaluation and potential treatment would also must get a thorough physical examination to possibly pinpoint some underlying physical conditions. They don't always have to be a brain tumor in the lining of the brain. They could be more simple or possibly worse. That simply medicating the symptoms does not necessarily handle the underlying problem, which may be social, may be physiological. And we're liable to neglect those sources in simply medicating so that somebody's not acting out anymore.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
Any other questions, Mr. Balfour? Thank you, Mr. Balfour.
Thank you, Representative Tomei. Representative Chris.
Excuse me. Janet?
Good morning again, Janet Carlson, Marion County Commissioner. As Sandy mentioned, I'm offering an amendment to delete sections 1 through 7 of House Bill 2128. The first seven sections deal with a problem, and it remains a problem even though I'm proposing to delete those sections, with the relationship between the state commission and the local commission and the relationship of the local commission to its county board. And certainly the language in the first seven sections perhaps clumsily tries to deal with that. It's a difficult dynamic. What has happened since, actually prior to 1993 under other iterations, but since the State Commission on Children and Families was created in 1993, is that the legislature allocates general funds and federal funds to the State Commission on Children and Families, which by formula go down to the local commissions on children and families. Generally, those local commissions have a public process, an open competitive process, sometimes a collaborative process, where lay members of the local commission, citizen representatives who serve on their allocations committees, and professional members of the local commission work together to determine how those dollars best be spent in the community for services that are determined as needs through the mapping process, and services which also leverage many other volunteer and in-kind and grant resources in the community. There have been occasions when, because the Board of County Commissioners is the final arbiter, when the local commission's recommendation is set aside in part because county commissioners have a want to fund something else, whether it be another county service or another service that is of their liking, and in essence sort of circumvent that open, public, competitive, or collaborative process which has gone on. And the State Commission really has no remedy to deal with that when that happens, because by statute and by rule, when the Board of County Commissioners approves the budget, it's approved, and the Board is the ultimate arbiter. Now, it's interesting because now I am a county commissioner, and this bill, as it's written, would actually limit my authority, and so I realize that's the clumsiness of it, and I've had many spirited discussions with some of my colleagues in the last few weeks explaining to them the rationale behind the first seven sections. What I have suggested, and the Association of Oregon Counties was very open, Gordon Foltz and I had a conversation, is that perhaps through an education process in the next interim, AOC take this issue on in the Human Services Committee and take a look at how county boards will deal, particularly in times of diminishing resources when counties are looking for funding to support services at the county level, how we deal with this issue of making sure that we honor the process that local commissions go through in their funding process and still maintain the authority of the boards of county commissioners to be the final decision maker in the county. So that's in a nutshell, so as not to leave you in the dark as to why the bill was written and also as to why I'm proposing that we delete those first seven sections by the amendment that you have before you. Sections 8 and 9 actually deal with a related but a budget issue, but not the same issue that I have just been talking about. This language was based on a budget note that passed during the last legislative session that requested that the state agencies that create public health budgets involve representatives from public health from the beginning of budget development through its presentation to Ways and Means. There was some concern, I served on the Human Services Subcommittee of Ways and Means, that
public health and other local agencies were in essence responding to budgets that had been created without a great deal of input from them. And so this assured that their input would happen from the inception of the budget process through. My understanding up from Gene Cowan, who's a county commissioner from Lincoln County and came to testify on February 3rd, and also Sue Capillas, who's a county commissioner from Jackson County, both serve on what they call LGAC, the Local Government Advisory Committee, and that group has been actively engaged with the Department of Human Services and working through the budgets this time, and they reported at Human Services meeting in November that they were very pleased with the outcome of that budget note. This would simply place that budget note in statute. It expands it to include not only public health, but also local commissions on children and families, juvenile departments, and mental health. So it would be basically the funds that come from the state to the counties that are passed through for services that are delivered at the local level. One last point, and that Sandy raised that as well, is there was some question raised by Commissioner Cowan about the language on page 6, lines 11 and 13, that whether local public health agencies and local providers of children's mental health services accurately reflect county mental health and county public health. And Commissioner Cowan suggested some language in her testimony to you. I think she proposed local public health authority, local mental health authority. When Cindy Hunt just came into the hearing room a bit ago, having not seen this, I asked her if the word county could be placed in each and the words reframed a bit. She said that would not be a problem. So I would propose perhaps to the committee that when I was the representative last session, I trusted Cindy to come up with the correct language to meet the intent, and the intent would be that it would be county-delivered public and mental health programs. I think, Cindy, what Cindy was getting at is that in some counties, the county is the mental health authority. However, it is local providers of mental health services. The county doesn't necessarily always directly provide the mental health services. So that was the difference. But you can fix that to make sure that the county's in the is clearly articulated in the language.
So Cindy is prepared to write an amendment to this to be more specific as to intent.
Cindy would be happy to work with Sandy and the chair to come up with language that meets the intent of the legislation. Yes.
Okay.
Yeah. Let's send it.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Now that you've eliminated everything except the last two sections.
Yeah, you've heard of a gut and stuff.
I'm still not sure now what the bill is going to go. Let's go to Section 8 now, now Section 1. Basically, I can understand that. The state agencies and programs, no matter if they indirectly or directly serve children, they're going to review the local commission's comprehensive plan.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Okay. And who, when you say state agencies, they are listed, who are they? I mean, just any and every state agency and program?
Chair Cruz, Representative Monis Anderson, I believe that actually House Bill 2124, that is the one that put the executive order in statute, clearly lists those agencies, and that this is just a rearticulation of that concept or direction that was in the executive order.
Okay.
We have the executive order.
Okay, so. Great. And follow up?
Mm-hmm.
Then in Section 2, developing a budget for public health or for mental health, some counties probably are very, very good at it, and usually it's maybe just one person. It's so complicated and convoluted, and I'm not quite sure when you're talking in this section what the intent. Can you restate what the intent of that paragraph is?
Representative Cruz, Representative Monis Anderson, the intent is that when the state agencies are developing their budgets according to the budget instructions they get from the state, that local representatives participate in that state budget delivery process to determine the pass-through funds that are coming down, how the budget is framed to present to the legislature. So it is not at the county level where the budget is created. It's at the state level, at the Department of Human Services, at the Criminal Justice Commission, at the State Commission on Children and Families, where those budgets are initially created, and the pass-through monies, the amount is determined, the form of the set-aside, and how those dollars flow, and so forth. The State Commission on Children and Families has for some time involved in various different ways. They try different ways, I think, every biennium to involve local representatives in budget development. Just to give you an example, again, as I was a member of the Human Services Subcommittee on Ways and Means last session, and the local pass-through money was put into a budget package that was called local administration, and that was all of the dollars that go to local mental health services that were called administration in the budget. And so when I dug and tried to pull out and demonstrate how these actually were service dollars, it certainly didn't portray, I think, to the policymakers the real intent of that. I think if you had, and from the state, not to criticize the state level, but their concerns were mostly around the state hospitals and things that were directly under their jurisdiction, and the pass-through money is certainly important, but it isn't the key thing that's their state responsibility. So when you have local people involved, they can point those types of things out and say, hey, wait a minute, we're not administration. We are services, and you can work through some of those issues about framing the budget and then not be placed in a position when the budget comes to the legislature of being considered public testimony and having 5 minutes on one day to come in and tell your story. So that's the idea of having it be a collaborative joint process from the beginning of budget development, where local people are at the table at the state agencies helping them develop their budget.
Okay, a follow-up then. And I'm not sure I'm still with you, Commissioner, but say we have an immunization program. I'm going to deal with health because that's what I'm most. An immunization program, and we put, and a county decides it allots this amount of money for immunizations. This bill could prevent the locals from putting the amount of money they want. No.
Mr. Chair, Representative Monis Anderson, this bill would put representatives from public health at the table when the Department of Human Services was determining how much dollars were available for immunizations, how much are available for family planning or AIDS or whatever, how that gets packaged together in a budget that's presented so that the legislators can see how much of those dollars actually get passed through to the local level and then go into those county budgets. How they're developed currently, or how at least my experience in the last session was that the pass-through dollars were not easily discernible in the budget package the way it was presented at the table to us.
Okay, follow up. And I think this will be extremely complicated. Each county and is. Their needs and how they use the money, the locals set up their own budgets, and then their budgets are then sent to DHS. This way it looks like DHS is going to determine how the money flows.
Representative Monis Anderson, right now do you develop budgets and you send them to DHS and you say this is how much we need for the next biennium? Or do you respond to, I believe you respond to, DHS says, here's a package of money that you're going to get. How are you going to spend it? And you send a plan in based on their revenue estimates.
Yes.
This would allow local representatives of public health to be with DHS when they figured out how much money there was and presented that to the legislature.
Just one last follow-up. It'd be nice to have someone from DHS explain to me how easy that would be to implement.
And Representative Monis, if I could just say that currently this is a budget note, and representatives from the counties, as I mentioned earlier, are working through the local government advisory committee, and that process is going very well. So,
Representative Thoma.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Janet, I've been on local budget committees for several years, and I'm just a little bit confused about the section 2 on page 6. So the representatives shall be involved in the initial stages of budget development to the final budget decision, shall include members from such and such. So are you saying these people will be on the budget committee that will make final decisions?
Representative Tomei, I think your confusion with both of you is that you're assuming that this relates to the local budget. It does not. It relates to the state budget. It relates to local people being part of the development of the state budget, which generally happens the summer before the legislature meets, the budget instructions come out.
The way that it's phrased,
you'll notice, she'll involve local agencies when the commissions, that refers back to that line 2 and line 3 on page 6. So it's referring to local representatives that are involved with these four state agencies as they develop their budgets, which then pass through dollars to the local level. It does not impact the state agencies creating their own administrative budgets for what they need or for their state programs, only in as much as those dollars get passed through to the local level, so that we have a partnership between state and local representatives as we negotiate at the beginning dollars flowing through to the local level, and it's not looked at as separate, but it's looked at as part of a systems approach.
Thank you, Chair.
That's the intent.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Representative Anderson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I guess I kind of agree with Representative Monis Anderson that I see this as being more complicated than probably needs to be. I've seen it in transportation where rural counties have gotten a lesser share than they really deserve, depending on population, and that is starting to be balanced out pretty well. But I would much rather see DHS in this case be an informational source and then just pass the money straight through to the commissions and let them, with consultation from their local agencies, mental agencies, make the decisions locally. Otherwise, we're getting back into the same problem that's gotten us here where we are in the budget crisis, that we've got quite a bit of expenditure in Salem and not as much money for service in Josephine County or Multnomah County.
Representative Cruz, Representative Anderson, the process you're talking about, again, happens after the budget is approved by the legislature. Then the dollars go out to the local level, and they determine how they're going to spend it and send back a plan. Right now, in the Department of Human Services process, the extent to which they involve people has varied over time. But this is talking about before the legislature sees the upcoming two-year budget, having local participation in that process so that local people work with state people to determine how much you get down at the local level. So if you think back prior to where you're thinking right now, the local budget process doesn't change because of this bill. It is simply a matter of involving local people in developing that budget, which then you will get. Because if you're not included, then you get no say in terms of how much money you get. Representative Cruz, Representative Anderson, you only get a say after the dollars are allocated. If you get $10 million, that's determined by somebody else, and then you figure out what allocation formula is going to be used or whatever. But you don't get a choice to determine whether 10 should have been 12 or 11 because it already came to the legislature without your say.
Well, the numbers are the numbers. If we have, 8% of the total population of the state, we get 8% of the money.
Representative Cruz, Representative Anderson, choices are made at the state level all the time about how much goes into state administration, how much goes into state programs, how much goes to the local level. When local people aren't included, then we have no opportunity to influence those decisions.
Gordon.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, for the record, Gordon Fultz with the Association of Oregon Counties. Although our association has no official position, we've been working with a number of county commissioners on this particular bill, and you've heard from Janet with respect to Gene Cowan, who testified before you on February 3rd. We were the ones who were responsible to some degree for this language being in the original budget note last time around. The only intent here is that local local departments, local public health, local mental health, local children and families, be involved with the agencies that build the budgets in the interim prior to the time the legislature convenes, and as the governor reviews that budget, to have some early intervention with that particular process so that we have some idea and we can offer our comments to them as they develop that budget. Otherwise, what happens is the budget's developed in a vacuum without our input, comes to the governor, comes to the legislature, and then we find ourselves in May or June testifying before Ways and Means about something that should have been there in the first place. So all it is an attempt to collaborate early, and it has worked very well. In fact, we've even asked the agencies, because we at the county level believe that we are your deliverers of service for a lot of functions, but we never seem to get involved early enough in the stage where we can offer the local part of the partnership into the decision process. And so this particular bill addresses us being able to come in early in that process. And so we've been very supportive of this kind of language.
For all intents and purposes, this codifies a budget note in a process that is starting to show results.
So
we could have said that really early and said right. All this, but Representative Mona Sanderson.
Well, I still need some clarification here. The legislature is basically the one who figures out how much money will go to education, how much money will go to public health. What you're saying is you want to make sure that the county services, every program that the counties might want to have, I mean, you're going to make some priorities and you want to make sure they're heard.
Mr. Chair, Representative Mona Sanderson, what we want to make sure of is that as the first thing you do as legislature is you look at what the governor's prepared. And what the governor's prepared is a result of what the agencies have prepared and then been reviewed by DAS and approved by the governor. What we want to be able to do is at least have some input in that process with the agencies prior to the time that DAS and the governor finally approve, and then you see it. Otherwise, what you see is you have the state-level thinking on what program should be there, sometimes with or without local input. So all we're trying to do is get into that early part of the process so you have some representation, as you see the governor's budget, hopefully, of the whole system, state part of the system, the local part of the system. That's all. We recognize that you ultimately make the decision. Final decision comes here. But at least you have, as you see the governor's budget, you have hopefully some of our thinking represented in that. And we'll also be here and testify as well if we need to. But
thank you. Don't you have that power right now to give input to DHS? I'm thinking of, let's talk about the DHS budget. Don't the local agencies right now, they submit their budget to DHS and then DHS submits it to the governor?
Mr. Chair, Representative Mons Anderson, that is not the case. Normally, I mean, there are some cases like in public health and mental health where there's some plans submitted. And we are hopeful that the agencies consider what's in the plans as they develop the budget, but they don't have to. They don't have to have a process that involves their stakeholders. They're encouraged to, but that generally, I mean, that's sort of up to each agency. And, of course, we've gone through a remodeling of the DHS process now, since we don't have specific divisions. We're dealing with one entity, and so we're trying to figure our way through that particular process. But there's nothing that says that they have to have us at the table as they develop their particular proposals, either their current service level budgets and or their budget packages. And what we're trying to do is just to have that input. It doesn't say that they have to follow anything we do. It just says they have to have us at the table.
And Representative Cruz, if I could just add a thought to Representative Mona Sanderson, trying to clarify the whole the whole issue. What comes out in the governor's recommended budget is the starting place for where the legislature takes its action, as Gordon has mentioned. And so if you are left out of the governor's recommended budget, then you are in the situation of having to have the legislature find money, and you'll recall in WIC and other things where we had a difficult time doing that last session. It's much better if those issues are raised as the budget's being built and goes into the governor's recommended budget. Doesn't mean it's necessarily going to go in, but it does mean that the local and the state thinking both go into that process, rather than having the conflict happen way down during legislative session and the state is saying, gee, we didn't even know, you know, that these folks really wanted that, or, you know, that was coming forward. So it just moves up a process where there can be more input from the local level.
Mr. Chair, I just want to add one item here. I'll bring some more of these for the committee, but just basically list a number of services that are delivered by state and counties, and what you see in red are all of the services that counties provide for on behalf of the state. And so we're talking primarily, and you'll see a number of human services that are included there, we're talking primarily about those services where we would like to get in early, just to have some discussion with the state as they prepare that budget.
Any other questions? Okay, I'm going to instruct Sandy to work with Cindy to make these modifications so the language meets intent. And then we will bring the bill back, just so the committee knows the chair is supportive of this, and I think this is good public policy, and also so the committee knows this bill does go to Ways and Means from here, not to the floor. So with that, I'm going to close public hearing on 2128 and open a work session on 2120. Sandy.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, House Bill 2120 had a public hearing on February 3rd. At that time, there were a number of ideas and a lot of information presented. What you have before you, this is the bill that requires the local coordinated comprehensive plans to include comprehensive local plans for delivery of mental health services and the local public health plans. It applies to the local coordinated comprehensive plans effective on or after January 1, 2005. What we have is the 2120-1 amendments is an amendment that the current language in statute says 0 to 18. This language is changing it to say who are 0 to 19, thus covering children through the ages of 18. That is the -1 amendments that also has the effective date of January 1, 2005 on it. The -2 amendments, and I really apologize that we don't have this hand and gross, but we got these amendments at 7:15 this morning. The -2 amendments impact page 2, and this was brought forward in the public hearing on lines 33 to delete the word comprehensive, so that line 33 just says local plans developed pursuant to ORS 430.630 for the delivery of mental health services for children and their families. So we made just a couple of deletions there, and then in lines 37 of that same on page 2, we deleted line 38 and stopped that section after suicide prevention. Those are the -2. And not everybody has had an opportunity to look at these amendments, but we have not heard any objections to them at this point.
Do you want to can you speak to these, John?
Oh, and a footnote. I do not have an impact statement from fiscal. However, I did get a voicemail from them. This bill, though, they haven't had time to review the amendments. It is determined as, at this point, indeterminate, and they would request a referral to Ways and Means.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, Janet Carlson, Marion County Commissioner, the amendments that Sandy has walked through with you, lines 33 and 34 bring mental health plans into the coordinated comprehensive plan. What the amendments do is they limit that to children's mental health, so it's children and their families. That then pulls out the single adult residential, some of the other issues that you heard in the testimony. So that is the reason why the word comprehensive is also deleted, because it wouldn't be the totality of the mental health plans, just those portions that deal with children and their families. Lines 35 through 37, actually 38, pull in local public health plans, and we determine that access and outreach to uninsured families and other environmental factors were rather broad, and that the other programs that were included, prenatal care, immunizations, well child checkups, tobacco use, nutrition, teen pregnancy, maternal and child health care, and suicide prevention are all currently contained in the comprehensive plans already, because there are outcomes related to these. And again, so that narrows the scope of what would be pulled into the comprehensive plan.
Questions?
Representative Anderson. Are we going to have the counties speak to this?
I think we just did, didn't we?
Yeah, no, 2120.
I mean, do you guys have anything different than what Janet? Be interested to see if they go against one of one of the people that hires them.
Representative Cruz, committee members, again, for the record, my name is Gina Furman. I am the director of the Association of Community Mental Health Programs. And our association did not take an official position on this, but we are very, very concerned about this bill. And as I testified last time, we have many, many planning processes. And I think the intent of 3024 and the intent of this bill was to make sure that we had one planning process, and in fact, that's not what happens. So my concern is that we don't have an extra planning process. If indeed we just hand you our 3024 plans and that's good enough for this, I'm wondering the purpose. But again, we're concerned about the layers of planning that are required of us.
So what would be your suggestion?
Well, as the executive director, I'm supposed to tell you that there's probably no need for this bill. I believe, though, that this bill needs to be taken a look at in conjunction with some of the other planning bills that we have, and to see what can be collapsed. Or if it would satisfy this bill just to hand the 3024 plans over. The intent of 3024 last time was to include mental health plans in the comprehensive 555 plans. Mm-hmm. It's just another attachment. And so my question would be the purpose.
Mr. Chair, if I might, well, Janet's coming up. On behalf of the Coalition of Local Health Officials, which is what I'm speaking for at this point, that's the other group mentioned here, the public health plans. I think the concern is, in this particular environment, trying to do planning over services, and that the concern is whether we have enough funds to afford that, quite frankly. Public health already does a plan, and we certainly understand the intent to try and include it comprehensively in the 555. I mean, we understand what the intent is, and I think it's a good model. The difficulty is, does this necessitate additional work? Do they have to go back through the plan they already submit and ferret out other information and supply it on behalf of this particular plan, or can they just turn the existing plan that they turn into the health services agency to the entity that deals with 555 and call it good, so that there's no additional staff work required to sort through it? That's the big issue. If there's no additional staff work, I think there's at least we feel that that's probably doable. If it requires a lot of additional staff work, it's in lieu of services, and that's the concern.
Well, because the what was supposed to happen in 3024 basically got unfunded, where is that process at this point?
Chair Cruz, even though 3024 was basically defunded, there was a small amount of money that came through, not all of the planning. If you remember, it was separated into planning and services. We received none of the service money and part of the planning money, and those plans were indeed turned in, and some services were not provided because of that. We had to take people off and put them on planning. Those plans are done.
Okay. Mr. Chair, Janet Carlson, Marion County Commissioner, I just have two comments. Comment number one is that while the intent of 3024 was to tie into Senate Bill 555, it did not do so in the statute. It is silent on that point. So this just simply clarifies the fact that the two are connected. The second point I would make is that as the legislature, you certainly have the power and authority to direct whether or not the workload of this is going to be great or whether it's going to be small, and if the intent is that they're simply included as part of the plan as an attachment, as are the juvenile crime prevention plans, with the thrust of the plans being woven into the 19 high-level outcomes, which they are, my perception of it is that it would not require a great deal of staff work, but will in essence again bring mental health and public health to the table as equal partners with the other plans that are listed as other decisions get made along the whole idea of comprehensive planning. For example, if state agencies are supposed to look at the comprehensive plan to develop their budgets pursuant to the governor's executive order, if public health and mental health plans aren't included in that, then they're not part of that executive order. If they are included, then they come in. There's a lot of implications for this in terms of strengthening the voice of public health and mental health within the entire system, and that is certainly my intent, and it's not the intent to add a lot of workload to very overworked public health and mental health staff whose resources are declining daily as we go through this process, and I'm acutely aware of that issue. Just want to make that clear.
Janet or anybody, my intention, if I had authority, which I don't have, would be to look at the 30-plus statutory planning functions that we have at the local level and make them three or four, okay? How does this get us there, or does this move us in that direction or not?
Representative Cruz, the plans that have been listed up to date in the Coordinated Comprehensive Plan, the mandatory partners, if you will, as the state lingo goes, have been engaged in a process to try to create one form for all the allocations that come in, look at common outcomes, kind of one set of measurements that go through, to collapse the reporting processes so that there would be less work. I'm not sure, because I wasn't at the hearing the Friday after the February 3rd hearing, but I believe Donna Middleton was there, and I know that they presented this in Ways and Means, and are they still here? They could probably respond more than I. I just know I've worked with Barbara Simaglio and others, Becky Eklund in the group, and I was on one of the subcommittees that was looking at Phase 3, which is implementation, and the entire concept is to get to the idea where instead of duplicating all of this planning, that we're doing it in a coordinated, comprehensive way. That was the spirit and intent of Senate Bill 555 in 1999, and I think the fact that we have so many planning processes speaks to history in the past, and the idea that in two sessions we could collapse all of those plans that quickly. There's federal things that are attached to them. There's a lot of issues that come up, and so you have to very carefully work through it. But that certainly is the work that's going on right now at the state level. Would you like Donna to come forward?
Okay, I guess clearly the federal attachments could be reattached to other places. That's not an issue. I guess to be more on point here is if we have a bill here to kind of flesh in some of the comprehensiveness of the local planning process, would it be appropriate in a bill like this, if we're going to do an addition, to also do the subtraction? In other words, at some point in time, if we're trying to collapse these things into three or four different matrices, shouldn't we have in the bill doing that reference to the planning structures that we're eliminating?
And Representative Cruz, the the ORSs that are referenced in the two reference the planning processes that currently exist, so they do not duplicate those processes. They simply move them in. I'm not familiar enough with the statutes governing the 30-odd planning processes to be able to answer that question. All I know is that it sounds very simple to collapse planning processes. In reality, it takes a lot of discussion, a lot of work, meeting after meeting after meeting. Just anecdotally, Community Action in Salem, Oregon, that only has three counties and about five programs, energy assistance, some housing and so on. I took all five of their intake forms and tried to create one intake form out of five, and I had probably about eight Excel spreadsheets of items that the various ones required, and a lot of that was federally driven, and then trying to figure out how you got to one single form that people would have to fill out to make it easier for them. It's just, all I'm saying is that it takes a lot of work to be able to figure that out. And that is so that is the work of the state collaborative agencies to figure those things out with local input, which is what they've been doing over the past 4 years since 1999, and have made a great deal of progress in that regard, but have had also had to do the mapping and the planning and so on, and we're just right now getting to the spot where we'll actually be able to do implementation and put everything on one form and send it in and do the reports together each quarter, so you're not duplicating all of that effort.
I guess what I'm looking at is how the over time how all of this has developed, and my sense would be that there was intent probably at various points in time to create a planning authority that usurped the authority of a planning authority, or combined it in a different way of something that already existed, and yet what already existed still stayed in place. And so we've created something to replace something, but the thing replaced still exists.
Right.
Okay, and you know, that's part of the problem. And I guess I would like to see if, you know, I support what we're trying to do here in this bill. I'm just wondering if what ultimately should be in this bill is maybe a more comprehensive look at what currently exists and what has been usurped and should be eliminated statutorily, because they still exist, and it's still a call on local resources to have it in statute and have it be a legitimate authority for planning, even though they may not do it. They still have to do all the administrative nonsense that's associated with it. Nonsense is a technical term, by the way. So I'm wondering if maybe before we move on this, we maybe should have the State Commission and some other folks sit down and take a look at this, and Gina mm-hmm. and Gordon and you folks sit down with the State Commission and whoever else you think needs to be at the table and look at what exists and see how we do something like this in a way that not only creates better process but eliminates the things that shouldn't be.
Representative Kreese, I think that would be an excellent idea, and I think that if you bring together all the affected agencies with the state and local representatives at the table to go through, they could identify what planning processes affect them and whether they're statutory or whether they're federal, and how that all that fits together. But recognize that, again, it is a very slow and cumbersome process trying to figure out how all these things knit together. So,
and I fully understand that, but mm-hmm. with the budget implications and constraints we have, not only at the state level but at the local level, I think we are going to be able to expedite some things mm-hmm. in this environment we might not have been able to before, mm-hmm. and this has the right relating clause to do that. Mm-hmm. So, which is why I'm bringing this up.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, I totally agree with that effort. I think that would be a good exercise to see where we are, especially at this particular time. I mean, truly, we are planning in lieu of services, and I think that's not so good. But I think if we can't, I understand the value of planning, and I think if we can look to see what is essential, and I totally agree with trying to coordinate that and make it comprehensive as we can, that we should go about that effort.
I agree.
Okay.
Representative Kreese, committee members, I'll use a very technical term, ditto.
That is a technical term. Okay, well, I'm going to charge you folks and we'll sleep right back there. Let's see who, if we can get a list of who needs to sit around the table and see if we can kickstart this. I think this should raise to a fairly significant level. You know, I understand the complications, but like I say, you know, the federal things can be attached in various ways. I don't think the federal requirements are the main concern here. It's the main concern here is how we can ease some of the administrative burden, especially on the local folks, so that our focus can be service delivery and not administrative functions. So this could turn out to be a fairly significant piece of work if we do this right. So with that in mind, I'm not inclined to move any of the amendments in this bill because this may end up actually being a true gut and stuff by the time we're done. But it's got the right relating clause to go where we've been trying to go, and in this environment here in Salem and in the state of Oregon is probably the place we absolutely should be going. I would recommend that that all the players be involved, LOC and everybody else who is involved in service delivery. So, and keep us apprised as to what you're doing, and if I can help, I might be able to. I'd be more than happy to.
Mr. Chair, yes. Yes, do you have a timetable for when you'd like to have the work completed?
Thursday would be fine. I would like to at least have something preliminary within by the middle of March.
Okay.
If we could do that. Mm-hmm. You know, I'm operating under the assumption we will be here in July, so we do have a little bit of time. So.
Thank you
very much. I'm going to close the work session on 2120. You know, colleagues, I want to close. I want to run this committee on our time frame. I think that that the book of business we just put into this bill kind of may want us to kind of reassess some of these other things, so I don't think we're going to go there today, and I'm going to adjourn.
Good choices.